are listening to Sheep Might Fly, the weekly podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. This story is The Patrician from my Love and Roman Punk collection, published by 12th Planet Press in 2011. That was an awfully long time ago, wasn't it? The Patrician was nominated for an Aurealis Award and won both the DITMAR and the WSFA Short Fiction Award. It's one of my favourite stories that I have ever written, so I'm very excited to be able to include it now in the Sheep Might Fly podcast. From memory, it comes in 6 segments, so not quite as deep a commitment as my last story. Thanks for everybody who gave me such lovely feedback about Unmagical Boy story. I was nervous about that one, especially because it was going for so many weeks, so it was very nice to hear that people enjoyed it. Okay. The Patrician, Part 1. Clea Majora walked through the hot streets of Nova Ostia, her sandal-shod feet lightly treading on the wide, baked paving stones. She bought a honey cake from a pastry stall and nibbled it as she walked, using the vine leaf wrapper to catch the crumbs. At the wall, a couple of boys she knew from school were playing a covert game of soccer and called for her to join them. But she waved and kept walking. It was too hot for games, and besides, she had her own plans for how to spend the lunch hour. Outside the stifling confines of the city, she kept walking until she came to her favourite gum tree. She unpinned her stola so that it folded underneath her when she sat down on the rough ground and slid in the earbuds of her iPod. For a blissful 40 minutes, she listened to music and a podcast about movies she would never get to see. The rest of the world existed out there, and she liked the reminder of that. Clea did not see the stranger until he was almost on top of her. She was startled when he tripped on a root nearby and stared at her as she yanked out her earbuds. "I'm sorry," he exclaimed. "No, I'm sorry." Quickly, Clea fastened her stola back up so that it covered the front of the Gladiators Do It in the Arena t-shirt that she had borrowed from her brother that morning. "I'm not supposed to be here," she confessed. "Not during daylight. Are you a tourist?" "Yes," said the stranger, in a cultivated, I was not born speaking English kind of accent. "I suppose that I am. Are we near Nova Ostia? I lost my way." Tourists always came to the city by train or by coach, but were asked to walk the 10-minute hike up the sloped road so that they entered the city without the ease of modern transport. Clea recognised the factory-produced tourist toga and tunic as one from Roman road tours. This man must have wandered away from his group. "You shouldn't wander off-road," she said accusingly. "This is Australia. The bush can be dangerous." She should tell him about drop bears. That would serve him right. She was resentful of losing the last 15 minutes of her lunch hour. "Come on, I'll take you." He wore a hat, at least. Many tourists refused, wanting the full authenticity of the Roman experience, only to appear at the city gates bright red like crayfish. The city was built with shaded streets to keep the Australian sun away from bare arms and bold pates. But that 10-minute walk could do a lot of damage. The visitor wore a broad-brimmed woven straw hat, not a design Clea recognised from Roman road tours. His hands were blistered from their moments in the sun, but the rest of him was a paler, European colour. Clea dropped into the usual tourist spiel about how a replica Roman city had come to be built in New South Wales, though it wasn't really a replica, but a combination of several Roman towns. She added the part about real stone from Ostia and Herculaneum having been shipped over as part of the building process. "Yes," said the visitor, with a sigh. "I wish you hadn't done that." Still, he seemed interested enough and stopped to peer at the triumphal arch, which served as the city's gateway. The soccer boys were gone, probably yelled at by one of the merchants. The worst crime in Nova Ostia was to be inauthentic where the punters might see. "Would you like to wait for your tour group?" Clea asked politely. "Or some refreshment, perhaps?" She'd be late getting back to the Thermopylaeum at this rate, and it would look better if she brought a customer with her. The stranger's eyes were fixed upon the wall of the Temple of Vesta, and it was as if he had already forgotten she existed. "Thank you," he said absently, "but I travel alone." Clea dreamed of snakes, of women with bright silver eyes. She awoke to a flickering light outside her window, which was all wrong. It wasn't like Nova Ostia had street lights. She knew even before she made it out of bed that there had to be a fire somewhere. The Temple of Vesta was aflame. The white marble walls had turned black at the heart of the blaze. Clea watched as various citizens ran to help, rolling out emergency hoses that had been carefully hidden in gutters and hatches. There was shouting and urgency and the acrid taste of smoke in the back of her throat. A man leapt out of the flames and ran across the roof. As Clea watched, he jumped from wall to roof again and ran along gutters, holding something the size and shape of a Roman short sword. She knew him from his height and gait, the visitor. Not quite knowing why, she opened her window and leaned out. He turned, his head flicking once in her direction, and then leaped, this time arcing over the nearest wall and vanishing from her sight. Obviously, this was the sort of thing you mentioned to people, but when the governor's secretary went from house to house the next day, searching for any witness reports concerning the fire, Clea said nothing. At lunchtime, she bought two pastries and a flask of water and set out to her usual spot. The visitor was leaning against her tree, looking exhausted, his hat casting a short shadow around him like an anti-halo. "You did it," she said without ceremony, passing him the water first, which he gulped down. "Didn't you?" "Of course I did," he said, and then looked up at her, his eyes all shaded and mysterious. "How many bodies?" Clea shivered that he could talk about bodies so easily, as if he were asking about her marks at school or the number of pastries in her basket. "Two," she said. That was what she had heard from her mum, the neighbours, the soccer boys. There were two dead women in the temple, but no one knows who they were. She wanted to ask him. The question bubbled up fiercely inside her, but she held it down. Something told her if she said the wrong thing, he would just walk away, no matter how tired he was. "Damn," he said quietly. "One got away." Clea felt cold inside, and now she wasn't afraid he would leave. She was afraid that he wouldn't. The man was looking at her now, his eyes intently on her. "How old are you?" That was the kind of question you didn't answer. Not when a tourist asked you. Clea had learned that when her curves first came in. There were always older men hanging about, eyeing her shape under the stola, but he wasn't asking like that. There was nothing pervy about him. No hint that he fancied her. He was all business, but what kind of business? Assassin? Terrorist? 16, she told him, and saw the interest flick away from her again. Really? She was of age, so not relevant. How creepy was that? "Most of you sleep outside the city walls, yes?" he went on briskly. "Are there any children who sleep inside the walls?" "I'm not telling you that," she snapped. "Why should I tell you anything? This is my home and you're weird." Her whole body ached to trust him, to tell him everything she knew, and that was weird too, like she wasn't in control of her actions or her thoughts. Something about this bloke made her throw all her sense out of the window, and he was old enough to be her dad. He nodded calmly. "I'm sorry," he said. "I need information, and it's only fair I give some in return." He paused, waiting for her to define terms. "Who were those women?" Clea asked, her voice coming out shakier than she liked. "Lamia," he said, drinking another slug of the water she'd brought for him. "A kind of ancient vampire from Roman mythology. They seduce young men and drink their blood." Clea blinked. Again, he was oozing trustworthiness, like some kind of believe me pheromone. It felt like the truth. "And who are you?" she asked, changing it from what only at the last moment. "I am a traveller. The last person alive who knows what these creatures are and how to fight them. My task is to rid the world of the beasts of Rome. When the last of them are gone, I will rest." He sounded so casual about his death being a bullet point in the action plan. "I meant, what's your name?" Clea asked. He almost smiled, his face creasing under the shade of the hat. "Julius," he said.
"Like Caesar?"
"Yes." Something about him made her ask the stupidest possible question. You're not actually the Julius Caesar. This time he did smile, though it looked all wrong on his face, like it wasn't an expression that happened very often. No, that would be somewhat bizarre. "There are only three families who sleep inside the walls," she blurted out. He switched back to the main topic without a blink. "How many have children?"
"Ours, just ours.
My brother Ant is 14. Most of the families with kids preferred to live further out, where you could have a television in the living room and didn't have to be so discreet about Wi-Fi or electric kettles.
"Excellent," said Julius, his eyes blazing out of the shade. Clea couldn't sleep. She googled Lamia and came up with a few medieval bestiary wikis with less than helpful illustrations. Page after page of poetry by Keats, and a few vague references to the daughters of Mary Wollstonecraft. Julius had given her so little to go on. He assured her that her brother was probably not in danger, that the third Lamia had most likely fled the city, but Clea had not felt the pressing wave of belief that she usually did when he spoke. Perhaps he hadn't been trying so hard. "What do I do if something happens?" she asked.
"Call me."
"I don't have your number. We don't have phones here. We have email, though. Do you have email?"
"Okay," she was babbling.
Julius shook his head, as if there was something fundamental she just wasn't getting.
"If something happens, open a window and call me."
Clea didn't know whether it was super mega creepy to know he would be that close by or a complete relief. She didn't decide until morning came and her brother was still alive and annoying as ever, and she knew exactly how to feel. Stupid. Ripped off. Taken for a ride. Conned. 3 days passed. Clea did her shifts in the Thermopylaeum. She idly googled her university options, read a whole lot of manga, and almost but not quite forgot about the posh man in the straw hat. Then one afternoon, she came home to find Aunt on the couch, snogging a girl.
"Oh, get a room," she said, with all the usual grace and tolerance of an older sister.
"Get a life," muttered her brother, disentangling himself from the girl and tugging her by the hand into his bedroom. He had actual love bite marks on his neck, and the girl was far too pretty and far too smug-looking, and wasn't 14 way too young for that sort of thing? Mum was going to kill Clea when she found out she had actually caused Aunt to go into his room with the hot girl and close the door. Clea tried to remember what the girl looked like. There was a blur in her memory, like someone had reached out and smudged it with an old-school blackboard duster. Oh, blonde hair, silver eyes, smug smile. Right. Clea ran to the kitchen, threw up the window and hollered, "Julius!" into the street outside. She had 30 seconds to feel idiotic about it before the door clicked and he walked in as if he owned the place.
"She's here," he asked.
"My brother just took her into his room for making out purposes." She added that last part because Julius was old and might not get it if she didn't spell it out. Julius walked swiftly ahead and flung open the door. Clea was caught between embarrassment and curiosity as she ran after him. Ant lay spread out on his bed. The blonde girl crouched over him, and there were more than love bites on his neck. Blood spattered the pillow and stained the girl's mouth. Clea hit her with a chair. It was the first thing that came to mind, and it seemed appropriate. Julius had a sword. Where'd the frickin' sword come from? He hacked the girl's head from her body, which took a lot more effort than in the movies, and drenched Ant's room in a silvery liquid like mercury. He then took the chair from Clea, broke a leg off it, and neatly punched it through the girl's chest. Clea tried not to look, not to think about it, except to be glad of the silvery stuff, of the proof that things were other in some way, that she hadn't just helped a random stranger behead her brother's first girlfriend. Without a really good reason. Will he be okay? Ant looked dazed and blissed out, and the blood had already clotted at his neck. Julius gave the boy a cursory look. She chose well. Most Lamia victims drain too easily. Your brother is one of the rare types who thrive on such attention. She could have fed on him from a decade if she was careful. Clea shivered. Does that mean other Lamia might come after him too if he's an extra delicious Happy Meal? Ordinarily, yes. Julius took a small, leather-bound diary from his pocket and made a mark in it. But she was the last. Clea stared at him, stricken. Does that mean you're finished? You're going to die? Julius gave her a brief smile. A pleasant thought, but no. There are many more monsters on this list. I must rid the world of all of them before I can rest. Clea looked around the wrecked room at the chair and the blood-spattered bed and the body of the creature and the silvery muck sliding across the polished floorboards. So you do this sort of thing all the time? Yes. Why? It is my task and my birthright, he said simply. I am a Julius. And she wasn't mistaking that, was she? The sneaky little indefinite article that suggested Julius was not just his name, it was a thing. Are you done here? Clea asked in a small voice. In Nova Ostia? I'll help you clean up first, Julius said, as if offended she had not taken that into account. Lamia blood is quite messy. Yeah, I noticed. She wanted to keep asking questions, to get more out of him before he swanned off into the night. What are you? Julius looked pensive, as if putting it into words was something which saddened him. I am a manticore, he said finally, and then sent her to fetch a bucket of soapy water and squeegees for the cleaning. Thank you for listening. You can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at SheepMightFly and at TansyRR, on Facebook as TansyRR Books, and at Patreon/MusketeerSpace. See you next week for part 2 of The Patrician.